You are about to embark on the most wonderful experience of your life. I will not explain at this moment how and why it works. I don't have the time, it just does. The secret is not apparent to the casual listener. It reveals itself only to the person who is willing to follow the step-by-step instruction and who will follow through with a mental exercise by himself in the days that follow. Don't expect a miracle instantly. Results often appear immediately, but usually because of individual differences of makeup. It may vary from 3 minutes to 3 days. Make sure you don't do this exercise for the express purpose of feeling better or to get something out of it. That attitude destroys the effectiveness of the meditation and gives it a selfish twist. Do it for the pure love of doing and thinking properly. Do it to be better rather than to feel better. Desiring something in return for what we do causes us to be annoyed when results do not appear as expected. I know you want to feel better, but for the time being, put aside your fears, anxiety, guilt, and worries, and give all your efforts to thinking and feeling and understanding my instructions to you. Repeat the exercise meditation by yourself many times a day, at least 3 if possible, and as many as 7. Do not try to analyze why it works. There is a vast difference between thinking about and analyzing. If you do exactly as you're told, there will follow periods of well-being and perhaps periods of doubt, like, will it last? Am I kidding myself? It's too simple to work. Take advantage of your increased ability to control your thoughts to eliminate this from your thinking. Keep your mind on what you're told, and you will eventually understand automatically. Analysis is a substitute for understanding, and will lead to doubt, and doubt will lead to confusion, depression, and skepticism. Although you cannot make yourself believe, you can prevent yourself from disbelief. Therefore, be patient. Wait until you understand without effort. Don't wait until you feel like doing your exercise. Do them religiously. The object of the exercise is to control the way you feel. Our feelings have subtle ways of talking to us, like, you're too busy now, do it later. Be careful the exercise doesn't become mechanical. Do it each time as though you've never done it before. There is often an uplifting feeling lasting several days. As you become accustomed to this, you may start to question, is it wearing off? I'm not getting anything out of my exercise. Perhaps I'm not doing it right. Most of us are used to thinking with our feelings only. A man in great pain feels better after a shot of morphine. The intense relief feels good for a short time. He really doesn't feel good, he just doesn't have any pain. Should you experience this, don't be concerned. Do your exercise regardless whether you think you're succeeding or not. Never do any more than you've been taught. The exercise meditation is what it implies. The exercise brings the subconscious into subjection of the conscious mind. The meditation is the idea dwelt upon. Although the instructions contain apparently many suggestions, closer examination will reveal only one. Never abuse the power you develop through the lack of understanding, like commanding yourself, I will be brave, I will lose weight. The meditation exercise contains all the ingredients for perfect self-control. It accumulates only when practiced daily. If you want to break some habit or control some problem, at this moment, stop trying. I know it's very important to you, but up to now you haven't succeeded your way. Put the same concentration and effort into your exercise meditation, and you will find the problem will take care of itself in a very short while. There will come a time when a particular problem becomes less important. This may be quite puzzling, but remember what I said, don't analyze. From experience, just be glad that it must be. Be patient, in time you will understand. My voice is to be your guide for 3 days in a row. The 4th day, go through the basic exercise without my help. Then come back to the lesson on the 5th day. The 6th and the 7th, by yourself, back with me on the 8th. The next 4 days, by yourself, and so on. It is essential that you eventually learn to do it by yourself without any help from me whatsoever. But the day you stop and feel you can get by without your exercise will be the day you begin to fall back. Now find a straight back chair and choose either hand, loosely hanging it by your side. Be careful not to go to sleep or do the exercise for relaxation. The procedure is only to prevent tension. The cart before the horse procedure will lead to disappointment. If God wanted us to be relaxed in our foolishness, He would have so provided. Now place both feet flat on the floor. Choose either hand, hang it loosely by your side. Close your eyes. Now I'm going to teach you to concentrate. Listen very, very carefully and follow the instructions. Bring your attention to your hand hanging by your side. I want you to feel the blood flowing down into it. It will tingle. Just do that. Feel the blood flowing down into your fingertips. This is called being conscious of your hand. I want you to be very, very conscious of your hand. Mentally, shift your attention from one finger to another. Don't move your hand purposely. First finger, shift your attention to the second finger and the third and fourth and so on, and come back to the first one again. Just be very, very aware of each finger in turn until you feel the blood flowing down into it. Now, the object of this exercise is to cause your arm to become very, very light by bringing your attention to it in this fashion. Now, while you're being very, very aware of your hand, at the same time you find you can do it, make a mental picture of the back of your hand touching the middle of your forehead. And if your mind wanders off, bring your attention back to your hand. Feel the awareness of your hand. Feel the hand tingling as though the blood was flowing down into it. And then again, form a mental picture of your hand drawn towards the middle of your forehead. Keep doing it. And don't stop. Be very, very aware of this hand. Be very conscious of it. Feel the presence of it. Feel the blood flowing down into it. And then out of this feeling, you find you can make a mental picture of your hand moving towards your head and your head moving towards your hand. If your thoughts wander off, bring your attention back to your hand, and then again, feel the awareness, feel the presence of it, and then make a mental picture of your hand, the back of your hand drawing up towards the middle of your forehead, as though you were looking out through the middle of your forehead, as though you're looking out into space. And in this area, make a vague image of your hand drawing up towards you. The back of your hand touches the middle of your forehead, as though you're looking out into space with your mind's eye. Be very, very conscious of this area. And then feel the awareness of your hand and make a mental picture of your hand moving towards your head and your head towards your hand. If your thoughts wander off, feel the awareness of your hand again, and then make a mental picture of your hand drawing upwards towards your head and your head towards your hand. Keep doing it and keep doing it. Don't stop. Judge the distance between the hand and the middle of your forehead. See if you can estimate the distance. Don't hurry. There's no hurry at all. Be patient. Got plenty of time. Just be conscious of the hand. Feel the awareness of it. And make a mental picture of it coming towards you, as though you're looking through the middle of your forehead. Drawing closer and closer and closer. Keep doing it. If your thoughts wander off, bring your mind back to the awareness of your hand. Feel the blood flowing down into it. Feel the presence of it. And then make a mental picture of your hand drawing towards the middle of your forehead as though you're looking out into space and you can see it coming towards you. Judge the distance. Don't hurry. The object of the exercise is to make your arm get kind of light and buoyant, as though it wants to move up by itself. I know you can put your hand down anytime you want to. Just let your hand go up by itself. If your mind wanders off, bring your attention back to your hand. Feel the awareness again. Feel the tingling sensation as though the blood was flowing down into your fingers. And then make a mental image of your hand coming towards the middle of your forehead as though you're looking out into space. You find you can disintegrate unwanted, unnecessary thoughts in this fashion, by becoming very aware of the present. Just be aware of your hand, feel the awareness of it, and just feel it coming up towards you, so that the back of your hand touches the middle of your forehead. Judge the distance. In your imagination, in your estimate, see if you can judge the distance between the back of your hand and the middle of your forehead. Draw it closer, and closer, and closer. And you will feel, in a few moments, that the back of your hand is closer towards your forehead than it really is. And you think to yourself, well, if I move it just a little closer, the back of my hand will touch the middle of the forehead. But it doesn't. It feels as though your hand is passing through your head rather than to your head. And when you move it a little closer, it just doesn't seem to get there. It feels like it's closer than it really is. And this is just a little illusion you create by your own concentration. Now keep being aware of this hand. Be very, very conscious of it. Feel as though the blood was flowing into it. It will tingle. It may feel a little numb or detached. But just keep being aware of your hand and make a mental image of it coming towards you closer and closer until the back of your hand touches the middle of your forehead. Keep doing it. That's right. Now keep doing it. Don't stop now. Keep doing it. Draw it closer. And when the back of your hand touches the middle of your forehead, leave it there. When you've done it with one, do it also with the other. Now, while I'm talking to you in just a few moments, keep concentrating on the place in the middle of your forehead where the back of your hand is to touch the middle of your forehead. And keep doing it. When your hand touches the middle of your forehead, leave it there and leave it there as long as you can. And concentrate right on that spot and be very, very aware of my voice. And give all your attention to me, while being aware of the back of your hand touching the middle of your forehead. And if it isn't touching your forehead yet, just keep being aware of it, very, very conscious of it. Keep feeling that tingling sensation, that feeling as though the blood was flowing into it. And keep on drawing it up towards the middle of your forehead while I'm talking to you. Each time you do this exercise, you are creating the increased ability to control your thoughts from within yourself. But not because I say so, but because the exercise makes it so. Each time you do this exercise, you will create a greater awareness of the present, and the unpleasant events of the past become less and less important, but not because I say so, but because this exercise makes it so. You can't change your past anyway, so there's no point in thinking about it or being annoyed about it, no matter what it was. It no longer feels important. There's nothing you can do in your thinking to change it, so forget it. What you don't think about cannot bother you. The future is similar. Don't worry about it. Your exercise will cause you to keep your mind in the present. But not because I say so, but because the exercise makes it so. The exercise will clear your mind and cause you to keep in your thinking the simple things I will teach you in the place in your mind where you used to be annoyed and are no longer. Nothing from now onwards must upset, irritate, aggravate, agitate, or hurt your feelings, not in the slightest degree. Especially those little dishonest, unkind, unfair things that people say and do to you and others from day to day. You must not be annoyed inwardly, nor outwardly. I did not say you must suppress your anger. I want you to remember to overlook and make allowances, right at that moment. But not because you have to, but because you want to. You will realize it's your own anger and irritation which hurt you more than other people. Therefore, I want you from now onward to look for the opportunity to overlook and forgive right on the spot. Not 2 seconds later, but immediately it happens, so that you'll respond more and more to what you know and shall come to know is right, and less to conditions and people. Make allowances for everyone from now onwards, no matter who it is, especially the close relations who are around you. Because you cannot control your faults, the ones you can see and the ones you cannot see, you do not have the right to be annoyed at the faults of others, especially your family. The ones to make allowances for first are the ones close to you. And if you can't do it to them, how do you expect to do it to strangers? On the other hand, if you make allowances for them, it will be easier to do it to people who mean less to you. Don't expect anything from anyone. It's what you expect and don't receive which makes you annoyed. It doesn't matter what others have or do. When you do something for someone, do it because you want to, not because you have to. You must no longer have any imaginary conversations with people as to what you're going to say to so-and-so next time you see them. Never mind what you should have done or could have said. What has been cannot be changed, no matter how much you wish it. But you can change from now on. If you have felt disturbed about some worry or mistake in the past, remember, that person, if he's good, would forgive you without your asking. And if they're not good, just start making allowances from now onwards anyway. For it is written, "Forgive us as we forgive." It implies each time we overlook, we undo a little of what we've done in the form of mistakes ourselves. The coward is a coward from the time he should have been brave until the next time. If he again fails to be brave, he's a greater coward with more remorse than before. But if he chooses to be courageous, he would no longer be a coward. If the world would suddenly become perfect, the coward would never have the chance to redeem himself. So with you. You have allowed yourself to become annoyed and irritated over many trivial things in your life, and when you could have overlooked and made allowances, you didn't. Therefore, be glad when people are rude or unkind, for here is your opportunity to overlook. If there was no danger, you could not possess courage. If there was no hate, how could you develop love? These individuals are giving you the opportunity to accomplish what you failed to do before. The situation which once made you upset and unhappy will become the very thing to give you happiness and well-being from now onwards. Then, whosoever shall try to anger you or upset you is giving you the opportunity to rise above your problem. They don't know this, but they're doing you a great service. And the harder people try to upset you, the calmer you will become. Therefore, remember to overlook right on the spot and be plain-spoken with firmness, kindness, and patience from now onwards. Who tries to annoy you intentionally or otherwise is trying to hurt you with your own anger. Keep them out of your thoughts. Overlook and be plain-spoken. Keep this idea running through your thoughts often. Have the awareness of it at all times in your mind. Keep this as a spiritual and moral goal. Let it be more important than any material goal in this world, for it's the means by which everything else can be accomplished. Let the whole procedure give you a satisfaction and a joy of doing, which will far exceed the pleasure from material things. It shall be a pleasure to think about, to understand it, and do it again and again. It will change everything that passes through your mind, so that you make decisions according to it. Everything you feel, do or say, so it conforms to it. And that is, to overlook on the spot and be outspoken with firmness, kindness, and patience. Do it because you want to, not because you have to. Do it because you want understanding. Do it to think good rather than to feel good. Do it for the pure love of doing and being a better person, whether it makes you well or not. And if you want to have an objective to think about, think, if I could just learn to make allowances for people, I'd be better off. For this is the truth. No other goal will give you satisfaction, so there's no point in thinking about it. Everything I say merely points to simple instructions to overlook on the spot and be plain-spoken with firmness, kindness, and patience. Part of my conversation is to help you understand, the other directing you to think, feel, and do, so that you know how and when to overlook. This is very important. You must remember it often. Do your exercise on your own, and you will find it will keep the thought alive again and again. If you have something to say, say it. If you have something to do, do it. What isn't worth saying or doing isn't worth thinking about. Then forget it. As long as you don't have the intention of hurting anyone with your words, you have the right to speak up. You can't please everyone anyway, so quit trying. The first thing is to overlook. As long as you're not annoyed, you will always be able to disagree without being disagreeable. If people are upset because of your honesty, well, they're not your friends anyway, and you might just well know it now. Your real friends will respect you and love you for your honesty and truthfulness. Don't plan your conversation like, if he says this to me, I will say that to him. Keep the idea pure in your mind. Whatever it is, overlook it. Be plain-spoken, with firmness and kindness and patience. Make sure you overlook the things which should be overlooked, and are plain spoken about those things which should be said. I'm leaving this to your judgment. Make sure you don't change your words to soften the outcome, keeping things to yourself, which should be said or done, so it festers into resentment. And whatever personal problem you have, stop looking for its reason. All you do is confuse yourself more. Keep it out of your thoughts by thinking about what I'm teaching you. Don't analyze what I say. Think about it. Don't doubt. Push such thoughts out of your mind. Just keep remembering the basic idea, which is to overlook on the spot and be plain spoken. It doesn't matter whether people love you, you love them. It doesn't matter if people understand you, you understand them. And if they don't forgive you, you forgive them. Don't say, stupid idiot, when you see someone who's acting foolishly. Say mentally, here, let me help you. Don't criticize others. Make allowances, right on the spot. Don't take personal offense at anything. Let criticism roll off you like water off a duck's back. Now to sum up, it must be done because you want to, not because you have to. Remember to overlook on the spot and be outspoken with firmness, kindness, and patience from now on, keeping this in your thoughts in the present. Don't worry about the past nor the future. Do your exercise by yourself, and the exercise will add energy, which will keep the thought alive, which is to overlook and be plain spoken. Each time you make allowances, there will be a feeling of achievement, and you will see things in a different light. And what you shall come to understand will increase the meaning of the basic suggestion, which is to overlook on the spot. Then, each time you do your exercise, you'll automatically carry down your new understanding so that you do it better next time, which in turn will bring more understanding. Thus, the more you understand, the more you will feel like doing what you understand, and the less you will respond to outer conditions, temptations, what people say or do. Nothing must be added to this idea while you do this exercise, nor anything taken away from it. Merely remind yourself to overlook on the spot and be outspoken with firmness, kindness, and patience. I didn't say you couldn't think of anything else, but as you go through your daily chores and come in contact with people, no matter what you do, no matter what you feel and think, do everything in accordance with the instruction to overlook on the spot and be outspoken with firmness, kindness, and patience from now onwards. You shall remember to make allowances for people with all your thinking, with all your feeling, with all your understanding, because you want to, not because you have to. Remember, don't analyze, think about it. Don't worry, will it work, will it last? Don't doubt. Bring your mind back again and again to the objective. Don't discuss this with anyone yet. Just think it, feel it secretly, and do it. Now begin slowly to open your eyes. They may feel a little tired and heavy, and give yourself a good long stretch. While you're doing this and opening your eyes, remember, I want you to do your exercise at least 3 times a day as you've been instructed. The exercise is very, very important, along with the basic idea.
Hello, this is Roy Master speaking with a few tips of how to improve the journey to greater understanding. The recording you're listening to is 30 years old, yet it is just as fresh and as new as if it was first made, except some tips to help you appreciate and understand what you're doing and make your journey a lot easier. The first tip is this. Each time you do this meditation exercise, do it as though you're doing it for the first time. I want to emphasize that. Don't concentrate too hard. Don't try to learn every word, every syllable. Just let it go through one ear and come out the other, sort of thing. Be objective to what is being said. And then, lo and behold, you'll start to flash, understand, realize. And realization is much deeper than mere rote memory. And if you do that correctly, the wonderful thing will happen. Every time you listen to this recording, it will be like you've heard it for the first time. The same phrase, the same sentence, even words, will take on deeper meanings, seemingly without end. Now, the second important principle to understand is, I don't want you to look upwards. When I say, as though you're looking through the middle of your forehead, I don't want you to squint. Just observe a spot in the middle of your forehead and bring your attention there. As though you could see your thoughts passing across the field of vision, with you the observer, like you're sitting on the bank of a river watching the stream of thoughts go by. Don't concentrate too hard. Don't try hard to achieve something like you were exhorted to do so in school. If you fail, if it doesn't work, so what? Try again tomorrow. Keep trying. Just keep working with it patiently. Easy does it. Don't worry if your right hand fails to rise. It's not important. If you try too hard to make something happen, if you're too involved with the technology of it, you will become caught up with this recording, my voice, my personality, and it may become hypnotic. And that is a precaution. If that happens, simply realize that it's happening, and that should be sufficient to teach you to do it properly. The understanding of the difference makes the difference. Just the realization will cause you to let go. And the very awareness of it will cause you to relax and take a different view. I know you can't wait to be a right person, and I know you want to be better, but that requires seeing and admitting your faults. And that's exactly what will happen when you become objective and you come close to what I call the light. You'll start to see your past surfacing, coming up for review. It will enable you to be sorry and repentant, something you weren't able to do before, but genuinely sorry. And through that, some very powerful changes will take place without any effort. So be careful when you see your faults rising and you start to understand what your faults are and what your problems are and what you did wrong. Don't roll up your mental sleeves and go to work to try to fix it. Just observe the fact and don't be scared. Don't be afraid to be helpless, because there isn't anything you can do. Just watch those memories come to the surface and watch yourself become repentant or sorry, and feel the helplessness and don't resent the helplessness, and lo and behold, on the other side of that, you'll be all right, as if by magic. Changes will come about effortlessly, magically, just by realizing. Just one more point, and then you can read my books and listen to some other tapes and videotapes that I have, okay? You may listen as often as need be. I don't want you to become dependent upon me in the recording, but I've discovered over the years a very simple thing, that if you listen with a proper attitude, with the idea of understanding rather than just mere rote learning, then the understanding will take over my job of leading you. And that's a very important point. The most important thing that I can help you to be is yourself. Listen to what you realize, and what you realize will become you. And the more you act out that realization, the more a self you will develop that is out of the light, out of innocence. And another thing, once you get a taste of getting better effortlessly, and you start to realize religious truths that you were taught as a child, but this time realizing them in such a way they come alive in you, be careful you don't get too hungry and to want to absorb the Bible. Nothing wrong with reading the Bible, mind you, and there's nothing wrong with going to church, but don't try to absorb more. Don't be greedy for it. Let it come naturally. Otherwise, all that knowledge will cause you to fall from the grace you're discovering. It's a very important warning. So remember, changes must come about naturally, effortlessly, through the magic of realization. One last thing. There is a danger, however, of becoming caught up with my personality and this recording. And that will often be through ignorance and weakness. And if this should happen, please don't resent me. If I seem to have some kind of control or influence, it'll be only your own improper use of this recording that will cause this to happen. Please bear that in mind. If that should happen, just be aware of this, and the very awareness will take care of it. No need to struggle. Don't become resentful towards me. That will only bind you to the recording and to the process. Just like try to stop smoking and you struggle to stop smoking by becoming angry with yourself, you'll only get worse. It's the same thing being caught up with anything. Simply realize you're caught up, you're trying too hard, you're putting me on a pedestal, you're becoming dependent upon me too much, you expect too much, you become emotionally involved, you're learning it rather than discovering and awakening from it, and then you'll be free. Who was it that said you should know the truth and the truth will make you free? Well, what is this truth? Your own realization of truth as it occurs to you from moment to moment in the secret places of your mind that other people have made you doubt through emotion and anger and fear and put down. This concludes side one. Repeat this lesson for a week or so, and please try in the interim to do this exercise on your own without the use of the recording, and then go to the text on the other side of this recording.
Have you noticed that you can solve everyone else's problem but not your own? That is because emotion drives our understanding and common sense and replaces it with reason. Knowledge and intellect are often substitute for understanding and wisdom, just as pleasure is a substitute for happiness. Psychologists coin the word compensation to describe the attempt to replace a spiritual emptiness with the nearest physical equivalent. The feeling of fear, tension, and a desire to forget draws to the alcoholic the idea, if I had a drink, perhaps I'd feel better. Later on, he says to himself, perhaps if I had another one, I would feel better still. The excessive smoker or eater are similar. They think with their feelings. Their feelings cause them to think. We all compensate for unpleasant feelings in millions of similar ifing ways. If I had someone to love me and understand me. If I had lots of money. When we cannot give love, we need love. When we cannot understand, we need understanding. It's very frustrating because no one has it to give us. Always we try to bring ourselves ease, relaxation, and peace of mind through a material goal, which is impossible. Nothing really satisfies. A man with an inferiority feeling may seek an education in the secret hope he will be superior. He has calculated that it's the lack of knowledge which makes him feel uncomfortable around people. Although he may gain much knowledge, he still has no understanding. The compulsive eater feels the same way, but he blames it all on his weight and thinks, perhaps if I could lose some of these pounds, I'd feel more comfortable around people. Often, education, drink, overeating, and smoking are compulsive attempts at symptom removal. The root of all our thinking lies in the emotions. The root of emotion lies in the reaction to conditions. For example, someone is rude to you. You react. You become angry. And your anger draws to it aggressive and negative thoughts. And your thoughts, in turn, cause you to feel, do or say things for which you're sorry for later, when the emotion has passed. In simpler terms, emotion gives rise to thought. You're driving down the highway, and someone cuts across in front of you, and you think to yourself, you stupid so-and-so, one of these days I'd like to buy an old $50 car and knock off your fenders. In a similar manner, daily irritations often keep alive and revive unpleasant memories, which should have been long forgotten. If we destroy this emotion, the thoughts no longer have feeling or importance. Nobody but yourself can overcome your emotional problem. You have one because you allow anyone to trigger you emotionally, directing you through words and perhaps unkind actions. You must learn to control your own emotions. For the more you become emotionally upset, the less it takes to do this the next time. And the more the situation controls you, the less control you have over yourself. To overcome this, we need to learn two things. First, understanding. Just a little, because it will grow with use. Second, thought and emotion control. The ability to put this seed to work. If you cannot control your thoughts, you cannot control what you feel nor what you are. Example. The dreamer feels like he's falling in his sleep because of what he thinks. He's not really falling, but he feels like he is. He then reacts to what he feels by catching himself in his sleep. Surely we can feel guilt and fear in the same manner, because of what we continually rehearse in our minds towards others. Another example. It's easy to make you angry by being rude. But if I told you beforehand I was going to do this as an experiment, you would be mentally armed for the experience. Here we can see that knowledge can prevent reaction and emotion. if we move into situations which normally upset us with such mental preparations, the conditions no longer have any effect upon our minds. This advanced knowledge procedure is the principle behind forgiving. To forgive means to forget. If you cannot forget, you cannot forgive. It is not what is forgotten which bothers you. It's what you compulsively remember. When you become annoyed, notice how you compulsively rehearse unpleasant words in your mind. By doing this, you create a good memory for the worthless things and a bad memory for the worthwhile, because what you wish to learn, you must repeat to yourself. This is also one reason why people who have experienced great aggravation become fearful of it happening again. The situation has caused anger, and the emotion gives life to the repetitious thoughts, which in turn creates the anticipation. Notice how emotion affects thought, and thought affects emotion. When we feel hungry, we think of food, but also, when we think of food, we can feel hungry. When we become upset, we are caused to think. This negative thought, in turn, causes us to feel. Now, because we feel badly, we begin to worry. The more we worry, the more we feel, which again affects our thoughts, and the complete cycle is fed again and again by anger. Normal man cannot control himself, although he pretends to. He will work himself to death so he won't feel the tension and keep away from the cause of his misery. He will wear himself out to feel tired enough to sleep. He also attempts to drown his thinking by distraction, excitement, watching TV all day long, tuning the radio as loud as possible. And because we cannot forgive, that's forget, we will bend over backwards to make people like us. Here we compensate for our inability to love. For as long as people are good, we can feel and think good towards others. We even boast about our weaknesses. We will give in to avoid argument and upset, and then call ourselves an easygoing guy. But we're still nervous volcanoes inside. Usually a nervous person is one who hides and suppresses his anger. To build it up and let it out on some trivial matter is quite useless, because you say and do things for which you're sorry later. Man without understanding thinks without control. What he feels like doing is right, and what he doesn't feel like doing is wrong. We are driven by our self-made fear, anxiety, and excuses for our actions. Fear is the opposite to faith. We no longer want to do what's right, but become afraid of what's wrong. Because of this decreasing understanding, we create an increasing ability to analyze and rationalize, we call worry. The more we seek into the past to find the answer to our problems, the more problems we create. The if goals we set up in our minds always fail to satisfy, and now we become more confused than before. Therefore, the answer does not lie in knowledge. That is why it cannot be found. The secret lies in understanding, which can be obtained only by mental self-discipline and obedience to certain fundamental spiritual laws. In psychoanalysis, the analysis is first and the direction is second. In psychocatalysis, the direction and discipline is first and the understanding is second, because understanding comes best by experience. The Hebrew word for commandment literally means to point the way or signpost. It implies if the instruction is obeyed or followed, it would lead to more understanding. It is foolhardy to learn to swim while drowning. One would be wise to learn in shallow water in a spare time. Likewise, if we cannot control our reactions and emotions in our leisure, we can hardly be prepared for emergency. The mental exercise we teach does two things. First, we learn thought control, which means to forget or remember at will. For example, to remember to forget is accomplished when you forgive or make allowances for someone who's trying to annoy you. At the same moment, we destroy the bodily response to the situation, gaining a measure of control from within ourselves. Second, we learn as part of the mental exercise, to control feeling. A pianist cannot learn by thinking alone. He must have a desire to practice. It is difficult to change ourselves reluctantly. The man who lends his lawnmower reluctantly does so only with his movement, but not with his mind and feeling. In a like manner, many people forgive reluctantly, doing so only in appearance, but not in feeling and thought. Your reaction to hearing this might be, I don't get mad. I love everyone. But remember, just because you do not show your anger doesn't mean to say you're not annoyed. Being kind with your actions is not what I'm talking about. Basically, the second commandment says, love thy neighbor as thyself. The way you feel towards others is the way we feel in ourselves. If you love someone, you feel the love. And if you hate, well, then you feel hate by getting mad with yourself. The perfectionist is far from perfect. He cannot make allowances for others, so he cannot make allowances for himself. He criticizes others, so he feels like others are criticizing him. Thus, only when we are able to overlook the faults of others do we eliminate our own. Anger is a producer of fault. Forgiving is the opposite, is the fault reducer. So when you can say, I have no fault, then you can say, I have no anger. No idea is lasting, whether it be positive or negative. It must have emotional energy to keep it alive. The negative, morbid thoughts are created and kept alive through daily feeding of the emotion of anger. The nervous businessman who takes a trip leaves the source of his aggravation behind. Soon he begins to feel better, but when he returns, he becomes depressed again. Granted, getting away from the problem helps temporarily, but it's not the real answer. Therefore, the exercise is tremendously important, for it creates emotional energy so that we may keep alive positive thought without depending on conditions to do it for us. We learn in this manner to respond to our own understanding with emotion and feeling, doing more and more what we know and realize is wise and responding less and less to conditions and situations. In other words, we don't need a condition to be good to feel happy. We can feel happy regardless of the situation. Better still, the situation doesn't control you. You have control over the situation. The exercise meditation destroys the angry response, which is the cause of most of our negative thinking. The person who returns anger for anger and love for love is merely reflecting and mimicking the world around him. Anyone can be kind to those who are kind to them and angry at those who are rude to them. As long as you act this way, you cannot be an individual in your thinking, because you depend on conditions to be good so that you can think good. Before each lesson, listen to me again and take special note of the following. You may not understand now, but tomorrow or the next day you will. Animals respond to danger with anger, which takes one of two forms, either to run or to fight. When we become annoyed or irritated at some trivial thing and say and do nothing, we create the accumulating alternative to run. That is called fear. Because you do not know why you feel this way, you may seek to identify it with something. This is why we are often afraid of many things without apparent reason, like storms, driving a car, failure of any kind, yes, even crowds, because it's people who cause the anger in the beginning. Most guilt feelings are artificial. Your anger makes you compulsively think of little retaliations towards those who wrong you from day to day, like what we should have said, what we could have done. Your thoughts can make you feel guilty, just like the dreamer who feels like he's falling in his sleep but isn't. Now, if you search into your past to find what makes you feel this way, you will find the wrong reason. Now, either you can't forgive yourself, or you blame someone unfairly, which makes you irritated again, which in turn makes you feel more guilty. Guilt can be falsely identified in thousands of subtle variations, like, I feel guilty for not doing more for my children, or my husband or wife before they passed away, unable to pay my debts, not being able to work more. I feel guilty about sex, how I treated my mother and father, etc. Honest individuals who feel this way may seek to make up for it. They will give everything to their kids and they won't discipline them. They can't say no to requests, and they spend all their time doing things for people instead of themselves and the ones they love. Resentment and anger creates an act of suppression, which eventually becomes a conditioned reflex. Sooner or later, we are suppressing more than we're expressing. Anger sweeps away sensible disagreements with a flood of emotion which we cannot possibly express. So we say nothing, walk away, or cry, On occasions, we will blow up when we can no longer control ourselves. When the balance is reached, where we are suppressing more than we're expressing, we will have to push ourselves to work. Because anger is thinking without doing, we find it difficult to make decisions for ourselves, and we depend on others to do it for us. In our insecurity, we develop a need for people, which we foolishly call love. When they do well, we depend upon them more. But if they make mistakes, we resent them more, which adds to the cycle of angry emotion. Now, because we think and don't do, we procrastinate. We worry about what we haven't done and what we have to do, which is increasingly difficult. But worry is thought, and whatever is important in our thoughts become more and more difficult and even frustrating, because anger colors our thoughts in a negative manner. We will sit daydreaming and may find it difficult to concentrate with millions of things in our mind. We can read a whole page of newspaper and not know a single word on it when we finished. We follow the writing only with our eyes but not our understanding. By the way, this is one reason why children fail in school. Each time we allow ourselves to become annoyed, we must follow through with the chain reaction of thinking and emotion, and each day it grows into a giant negative tree. Anger is the father of our complexities and confusion, but unless you've done the exercise on the other side of this recording, you may not understand this. Positive thinking and well-being is a present you cannot give yourself. It comes as a gift from God for remembering to make allowances for your fellow man.
Now let's do the exercise again with a slight variation. Get that straight back chair, sit in it with your hand, right hand loosely hanging by your side, close your eyes, and just be aware of the spot in the middle of your forehead, as though you were looking through the middle of your forehead. Notice I say as though you're looking, because you're just shifting your consciousness up a little bit, not the pupils of your eyes. Don't squint. Don't strain. Easy does it. It is important that you remain awake and alert during these exercises, but you may, if you wish, lie down in a comfortable position with your hands beside you, but I do not recommend it. The chances are you'll fall asleep, and that is not desirable. For a while, until you learn to become proficient at the exercises, it's best to sit in a straight-back chair and just concentrate or observate as I teach you. So close your eyes, notice your right hand hanging by your side. Observe your hand until it begins to tingle, warm. Don't force it now. Don't put any effort into it at all. Just notice your hand by your side and until your hand gets to be warm. And it will become warm if you just bring your attention to it and don't force your attention. If your mind wanders away with a thought, just be conscious that it's done that to you and continue to be aware of your hand, your right hand, until it begins to get warm. Shift your attention from one finger to another as you learned on the other exercise. At the same time, as though you're looking through the middle of your forehead, and that's what I mean, as though you're looking through the middle of your forehead, you're not really looking or squinting, anything like that. Just shift your consciousness so it's like you're looking at the wall of a cave. The wall of your cave is your interior mind, your skull, if you like. And you're looking at your thoughts, but your thoughts disappear, basically. They dissolve like a TV picture that's still on, but there's no program, just flashing colors and lights and speckles. Noise, we call it. Okay? Just watch that thought process. And if a thought does appear to pull you into a daydream, just be aware that's happened. Be aware that it's happened. That's all. Look at the thought. And as you look at the thought, in reducing it to just little flashes of color and light, be aware of your hand glowing warm. Now, there's a certain magic in getting in touch with your feelings this way. You'll understand the reason why. Well, perhaps I can explain it to you as I'm doing the exercise with you. You see, if you can become objective to your thoughts, just a little bit, there's new information available called understanding, realization that you had as a child but denied. This realization has something to do with, well, making you feel guilty, making you aware that you're wrong. And you've run away from this realization. As you became overreactive and angry and upset and you doubted yourself, you started to function from the world around you, from your emotions, like an animal, not a person. And then this something called realization came back and incriminated you, but you didn't want to be wrong because something called ego entered, so that you kept on putting aside this understanding and escaping into thoughts, into feelings. You promoted the very process that led you to your downfall, to your unhappiness. So that's why you became unhappy, but you didn't know why you became unhappy. You were always setting aside the truth about it, as if that was the answer to the problem. If you didn't know you were wrong, you were okay. A lot of people do that. So this understanding contains messages, it contains information, it's a new source of growth and direction and fulfillment and happiness and joy and health. And you'll have to go through a little discomfort and pain, and you'll have to start realizing a few things about yourself you perhaps didn't want to face before. So, if your mind wanders away with your thought, the way you've trained it to do, just be conscious that it's done so, and continue to be aware of your right hand until it glows warm. Now shift your attention from one finger to another. First finger, second finger, just to stay in the moment, so to speak, so your mind doesn't wander off, just as a mechanism to keep your mind in the moment. And as though you're looking through the middle of your forehead, just watch the thought that pulls you away into a daydream, and then suddenly become objective to the thoughts. Careful you don't concentrate too hard or try too hard like you were motivated in school to pass an exam or to achieve a certain result. Just listen and become objective to your thoughts. This is not a concentration exercise as much as it is an observation exercise. You have to become objective to your thoughts and let your thoughts run by the consciousness, as though you were sitting on the bank of a river, letting the stream with all its flotsam and jetsam pass by you, not caught up in the stream, where before you were caught up in the stream of your thoughts. And struggle will only make you drown, sink. You'll add, by effort, more confusion to your dilemma. And what we are trying to achieve here is a slight alteration in viewpoint. A very, very slight alteration in viewpoint just by this process. So when you open your eyes and go about your daily duties and chores, you're going to see differently. You're going to be mildly distant from the rest of the world, and you're going to have a slightly different viewpoint. You see things differently, from a different point of view, from the point of innocence. You won't be defensive. But people might notice you watching them, and they might be defensive, so watch out for that. Don't get upset if they turn on you for appearing to see right through them, because that's exactly what you will be doing, and they may not like that. Learn not to resent that or react to it when that happens. So keep your mind now focused on one thing, defocusing. Remember, the meditation exercise is not a focusing of your attention, but a defocusing. A very important point. Concentration, I do not want. Defocusing, I want. You're just defocusing from your thought processes, from your worry, from your fears, from your anxieties, from your doubts. You're defocusing. When you defocus your mind, you start to realize things that you weren't able because your mind was captive. And, I might add, as you started to become guilty and unhappy, you cultivated this practice of emotionally captivating your mind to relieve you of that guilt. You'll understand this, or you should be understanding it by now, that when your mind is captive, so involved with emotion, something external to itself, there's a certain salvation effect, a relief of guilt. But it only makes you more guilty, because denying guilt is a greater guilt. Denying a wrong is a greater wrong. So you are going to come back, in a sense, to understanding things, and that has something to do with understanding how wrong you are, and you're not going to change until you admit that you're wrong. It's only going to hurt for a little while, so be sensible about this. So you just have to face the music, so to speak. So the entire idea of this meditation exercise is to be objective, to be defocused from your thoughts. And the results are simply magical, because you will start to understand about your life. You'll be able to see what you never saw before. But be careful. Once you start to understand, let understanding have its own magic. Just feel the helplessness before your problems. You may feel helpless, but don't resent your helplessness. Don't struggle with your problems. Don't say to yourself, aha, now I see what's wrong with me, and roll up your mental shirt sleeve, so to speak, and tackle the problem with some kind of ego effort. That would be a terrible mistake. There is a magic. Try what I'm teaching you. Give it a chance. Just simply realize what was wrong with you. Realize the mistakes you have made, mostly because of anger and resentment and holding on to grudges, and not speaking up, and suppressing thoughts and feelings. But just try standing there in the light of this new realization, helpless and not resenting your helplessness, and lo and behold, help will come. And you will marvel. Here it is. Here's a problem that you finally admit to, and finally allow guilt to catch up with you and make you feel ashamed. Finally acknowledge that you're wrong at the same time you're acknowledging that you can't change what you see, and you feel helpless and you don't resent it. And lo and behold, the pain and the guilt will vanish, and so will the problem. Now, if you didn't make the problem go away, then who did? It wasn't me. Something called the light within you. And that is the idea of this meditation exercise, is to grow from the inner light that was always there. But through a process of overreacting and anger and selfishness and greed and fears and guilts, you denied that light access. Emotion blocked that light. It blocked the free expression of this inner light, this natural intelligence. What you got as a result of feeling inferior and guilty was artificial intelligence. And don't be afraid of feeling stupid or dumb, because that's part and parcel of what's going to happen to you through this meditation exercise. You will feel dumb and stupid. Don't resent feeling dumb and stupid and helpless. That's very important. And one more thing. Just be aware of your hands as though you're looking through the middle of your forehead. Problems will seem to get worse before they get better. You know, there are little children who, when they're caught up in a fire and wake up in the middle of the night with their house on fire, some of them are so frightened they put their head back under their covers and they perish in the flames. Other little children, more aware, rush to the nearest exit. And there's the same thing with waking up after a lifelong struggle with your problems by escaping and denying that you have them. Through this exercise, you'll suddenly awaken to the fact that you have all these problems, so it looked like things are getting worse. It will look like your house is catching on fire. It will look like the meditation has caused the problems to appear that you didn't have before. So be careful. It's not the case at all. Wisdom is needed here. A cool mind and a determined spirit. Be aware of your right hand. Shift your attention from one finger to another while I'm talking to you. That's all. Don't be afraid. There will be certain strange occurrences which you'll be hard-pressed to explain. And you should be reading some of my books and other materials in order to take this a little further. But whatever strange experiences you may go through, in a manner of speaking, you will be facing your own private demons. You may see ugly faces and the like. And I won't go into that right now. That will happen. Don't be afraid. Don't react. Don't have a dialogue with your own mind. If you find your own mind talking to you, as though it was somebody else. If you see that you have become somebody else, that's possible. Don't be afraid of all this. Just look at it, observe it, without becoming emotionally upset or frightened, and it will pass. It's very important. Neither believe what it says or disbelieve what it says. Don't struggle. Just sit there and watch whatever rises out of the depths of your subconscious. It's important not to struggle, just to observe. And that's all. No need to be afraid. There will be things that will happen to you that are difficult to explain. But if you just stay calm and don't panic and don't be resentful, this is a very mysterious and wonderful journey you're on. You'll be through it and beyond it. And life will become a wonderful thing. Okay, all you have to do is just stretch and open your eyes and go about your business. And just make sure that you learn not to be upset. Be patient with everyone you meet. With outspokenness, calmness, and understanding.